Opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning.
Good morning and welcome. This is the Dr. Trudy Pratt Show, Positively Healthy, and I'm Henry Cuenca, sitting in today. I welcome you to my show about passion and inspiration. The focus of my show is seeking those who hold and live passionate, convincing lives. In many cases, purposes are driven quietly, subtly, and unseen, but yet cause significant impact to others and society as a whole. Our guests today are three RNs from Mercy Hospital. They are filled with tremendous amounts of love and compassion, not only to the patients they treat, but the co-workers and peers. Two of our guests have been picked within the top 30 healthcare heroes in Northern California by the Record Searchlight. These 30 healthcare heroes were selected for their tireless dedication to excellence in their field, can-do attitude, and their kindness and compassion. Ladies, welcome to today's show.
Thank you, Henry.
Thank you, Henry.
Very good. I'd like to start by introducing you to our guests. And Sandy, I'm going to ask you first. You are a registered nurse at Mercy, and I'm going to ask you if you could tell us a little bit about your job.
Well, thank you, Henry. I'm Sandy Downing. I'm a registered nurse, as you said, and I have the distinct honor of being the clinical manager for Mercy Hospice. Mercy Hospice is a group of about 50 people who care for people in the community that are through the last part of their journey on this earth. Mm. So we're a medical model and a social model. We have social workers and chaplains and nurses and home health aides and physicians that help people to navigate the system and manage symptoms and make their spiritual journey as they're preparing to leave this earth.
And you have the responsibility of overseeing this entire unit then?
I do.
Interesting. And tell me, Sandy, are you from originally from Reading? Or?
Well, I'd like to think so. It's been enough years. I think I've been in Reading about 25 years. But prior to that, I'm from Susanville. So this is the big city for me.
Oh, boy. Big town girl.
It is. This is the big city.
Our second guest, Michelle Woods, registered nurse. Welcome, Michelle. Can you tell us about your job?
Thank you, Henry. I am Michelle Woods, and I am the clinical nurse liaison for Mercy Medical Center Reading. And my role at Mercy is to be the external face of cancer care for the hospital. So I do all the external screenings. I do breast cancer, prostate screenings, and I serve as the nurse navigator for newly diagnosed cancer patients in the community who need a source of education, a source of hope. And my entire focus has been on the spiritual care and emotional and physical care of our cancer patients in our community here in Reading.
And you've been in this position for about how long?
I've been at Mercy since 2008, but I've actually been in oncology nursing for 37 years
now. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, so you have an enormous amount of experience. Yeah. Wow. Isn't this wonderful that we have your services? You know, I think there's a lot of patients that have an awful lot to tribute to you folks here. Margaret Wilson, our other registered nurse guest, also was selected as a healthcare hero. And I welcome you to the show, Margaret.
Thank you, Henry. It's my pleasure to be here.
Wow, what a voice. You know, the reporter had this health hero said that your compassion for people shows in your very first word. And you've already struck me that you are a very, very compassionate lady. And thank you for appearing. Could you tell us a little bit about your responsibilities in your job?
Yes, I am an RN clinical coordinator with Mercy Hospice, and I have the honor to work under Sandy's management. She is one of my heroes in how she leads hospice, and she sets the tone. My role is probably overseeing the day-to-day operations of the hospice staff, in that I work with the RNs who are out seeing patients and the caseloads that they're managing. And I also triage phone calls when a family or a patient calls and they are having any pain or symptom management issues or concern. I do my very best to assist them at that moment with either, medication management or non-pharmacological interventions, and try to problem solve and triage their needs. If I'm not able to solve the problem over the phone, I will then reroute one of the other field nurses to go to the home to directly assist the patient and family. I also speak with physicians and help them navigate through hospice and assist with taking the referrals.
Wow. And Margaret, you've been in this role for about how long?
I have been with hospice for 14 years. 7 of those years I did spend as one of the field RNs and as an RN case manager, overseeing a caseload of patients and, monitoring them and helping them with their end-of-life issues and guiding them through. And the last 7 years have been in this RN clinical coordinator role.
Very, very experienced lady. We're going to have to take a break here, but Sandy, when we come back from our break, I want you to clear up the definition of hospice. I think that there may be some questions by people, at least there is in my mind, as to the inclusiveness of hospice. So we're going to take our break. This is KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media.
Do you have neck, shoulder, or back pain? Did you know that acupuncture can help? The experts at Redding Acupuncture Healthcare can treat all these problems and so much more. Acupuncture is a virtually painless therapy that's been used in China for over 1,000 years. It stops pain by stimulating the production of pain-killing endorphins while improving blood flow to the area of pain. Redding Acupuncture Healthcare has 2 experienced acupuncturists with over 25 years of combined experience. Redding Acupuncture is the largest acupuncture clinic in Shasta County and offers the most extensive selection of Chinese herbs, teas, books, and aromatherapy products in their herbal pharmacy. Redding Acupuncture Healthcare is conveniently open Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and Tuesdays and Thursdays until 7 p.m. We also have Saturday appointments available for your convenience. If you or a loved one have pain that prevents you from enjoying life to the fullest, then call today for a free consultation at 223-2346. Redding Acupuncture Healthcare is in the Raley's Cobblestone Shopping Center on Hartnell. Call today, 223-2346.
Hey, you want to help more kids have a great Christmas? Then join the Marines. You won't have to put on a uniform. Just grab a fork and dig in. It's the Toys for Tots Spaghetti Feed Fundraiser, Sunday, November 6th at Fat Boys Rotisserie and Sandwiches on Twin View Drive in Redding. Bring a new unwrapped toy to donate and get ready to enjoy a great dinner. Tickets just $10. Call 515-5226 or 221-4144. Sponsors include Clyde's Home Electronics and Classic Car Parts, Aces, The Cam Club, KLXR Music and Memories, and KCNR Free Fire Media.
Hi, I'm Frank Galusha, your host for My Outdoor Buddy Radio from 6 to 7 Saturday mornings here at KCNR 1460 AM. Our show is packed with fishing, hunting, and outdoor news you can use. All brought to you by Coachmaster, Loyal Pet Food, Rolling Hills Casino, Sevillano Lynx, the Clear Creek Sports Club, and the Belligerent Duck. Tune us in for the latest fishing, hunting, and outdoor news at KCNR 1460 AM or listen to the show at myoutdoorbuddy.com.
Slow down, you move too fast.
Welcome back. This is Henry Cuenca, and we're interviewing 3 nurses from Mercy Hospital. And Sandy, you were going to explain to us before the break really the full context of the meaning of hospice.
Well, Henry, hospice is a concept that's been around for a number of years, and it originally started as a place where travelers could go to rest. It evolved in the early 1970s in England into a group of people that cared for people on a different journey, on the journey of life at the end of life. And that movement migrated into the United States a little bit later into the 70s and was recognized as a medical model by Medicare in the 90s. So what we are is we're a group of multidisciplinary men and women who provide care to people that are facing life-limiting illnesses. And that illness doesn't necessarily have to be cancer. There's a sort of a misconception that you have to have cancer to be on hospice, and that isn't so. It's any disease process that, if left unchecked, could possibly take a patient's life or a person's life within 6 months. That doesn't mean we have only 6 months to care for this person. It just means that in the physician's best judgment, they're facing something that could be life-threatening in 6 months.
Okay. I think that there's a conception that only the people that are admitted into hospice really just only have cancer, but obviously that is not the case. Are the majority of your patients cancer patients?
You know, only about 40% have cancer. We have a large number of folks that have dementia, and we have a couple of diagnoses that we're able to use. One is failure to thrive, and the other one is just unspecified debility. And we use those diagnoses for patients who are frail elderly that maybe don't have a definable specific illness or that have so many illnesses that it's difficult to pinpoint which one is causing the problem. But our main focus is comfort. It's not so important what brings them to us as how we address their comfort and their quality of life. We recognize that quantity of life may be limited, so we want to address quality and make sure that they're getting the most that they can out of every day, making them comfortable and allowing them to live whatever quality of life they want to live.
I see. Michelle, what drew you to want to become a nurse?
What drew me to become a nurse? Well, nursing gets a tag when you graduate from nursing school, but it is who you are all your life. And I think Margaret and Sandy can tell you the times when they knew they were nurses. And I share every now and then with students the story of the chicken, when my little sister successfully cut through a chicken's neck when we were in Jamaica. And my mom used to have to kill chickens in that archaic way. And Patrice and her best friend cut this chicken's neck, severed it down to the trachea, and the poor chicken lived. And my mother took a needle and thread and sewed the chicken's neck like a skirt, the hem of a skirt. And this chicken lived, and I put it in a box, and I fed it with a dropper, and the chicken lived and was healthy.
Goodness.
And I thought, my goodness, I can help something stay alive and move to wellness. I was just listening to what Sandy was saying about 40% mm-hmm. of hospice patients are cancer patients, and that presents a very hopeful component to me, having worked with cancer patients all my life, that you often think that truly all patients with cancer are going to die. And the truth is that a lot of patients with cancer don't die. Very hopeful. They go through their treatments, and they live to a ripe old age, and sometimes they just bamboozle their physicians, and nobody can figure out why they're still alive. But it's wonderful to know.
Miraculous, wonderful stories.
Miraculous, wonderful stories yeah. happen every day. People survive, right. and people do not only survive, but they thrive. And it's just amazing to be a part of a team of nursing that can start with a diagnosis, a disease, and if you need somebody near the end, you've got this team of amazing people that can help you.
And actually, between 10 and 15% of our patients, after they've been with us for a period of time and have been ministered to by this group, graduate from hospice and go away from our services, and
isn't
sometimes for years.
Oh, how heartwarming.
Right.
You must form wonderful relationships. You have to endure these wonderful relationships with people. You know, you've just been so prominent in their
We do.
Their
we become
life.
Part of their family.
Yeah, for sure.
And the hope, it may change with hospice. The hope may change from one of a cure to one of the best quality of life that we can help offer them. Mm-hmm. And that hope changes, but we can still help them meet their goals. Mm-hmm. We want them to be out and about. We have people taking trips mm-hmm. and to facilitate that. And though there may be no chance of a cure, there's always chance of dignity and comfort
beautifully
at
said.
End of life.
Beautifully
mm-hmm.
said. Margaret, I wanted to ask you, where the initial thought or seed of becoming a nurse. When did that occur in your life?
When I was first conscious of becoming a nurse was probably in the fourth or fifth grade when I heard about Clara Barton and Florence Nightingale. I just wanted to be there, and it's hard to articulate that knowing, that sense of this is what I want to be. I went through like a brief respite of wanting to be an airline stewardess, but that quickly went out the door. No, it was still serving people, but then I was just so drawn to caring for people. It wasn't one particular moment, just this calling and a movement forward that I've just tried to do.
And I know that you worked with your mother. Your mother had an illness at a younger age, and yes. You were her primary caretaker, correct? And
I was one of five, but I was the youngest, and I was there a lot with my mom, uh-huh. trying to guide her in my own way through this.
Did this have an influence in your chosen career?
You know, I think it does. I think all aspects of our childhood have an influence, but you know, I saw my mom ill, and I wanted to do anything in my power to help her be well. And if she couldn't be well, I wanted her to be happy. And that's what I tried to do as a child.
You have such a profound sense of compassion in your voice. And it's genuinely, it's very genuine, it's very visible that you are a very compassionate lady. And I would say that everybody around you really benefits by you being a peer and a part of the team. I noticed that all of you always refer to the team. So this strikes me that there's a real solid bond with all of you in the hospital. It just comes through very clearly that you have such a profound bond. And we're going to take another break right here, and we're going to come back with our ongoing interview. So again, this is KCNR 1460, Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media.
Too tired or busy to cook at home or go out to eat? We can bring the restaurant to you. Hi, I'm Jeff from Entree Express. We've been delivering lunch and dinner from your favorite Redding restaurants for 17 years. We can deliver to your home, office, or hotel room. Enjoy your favorites from 25 restaurants by calling Entree Express at 224-9791. That's 224-9791. Or you can Google Entree Express of Reading to find our website.
What do you look for in a building contractor? Experience and quality, and someone who's reliable? Dennis Janeway hits the mark. Dennis has got more than 30 years experience doing all types of construction. So whether the job is big or small, new home construction or a kitchen or bathroom remodel, call Dennis Janeway today at 604-6702. For experience, quality, and reliability, call Dennis Janeway Construction, 604-6702.
Hi, this is Colonel Pete speaking on behalf of the Shasta Country Military Officers Association. MOA is the nation's largest association of military officers, dedicated to a strong national defense and to protecting the benefits of those who have served. Join us for lunch at our monthly second Monday meeting at noon at the Country Waffle in Reading. For more information, go to ShastaMOAA.com. Shasta Country MOA, serving those who serve their country.
Slow down, you move too fast.
Welcome back. This is the Dr. Trudy Pratt Show, Positively Healthy, and I am Henry Cuenca. And I was about to ask you, very compassionate ladies, What is the biggest challenge that you face in your job?
You're probably going to get a different answer from each of us, Henry, but for myself as a manager, probably the biggest challenge in these days is how to provide the kind of care that we want to provide with more limited resources than we have had in the past. It's no secret to anyone that healthcare is facing some challenges. Medicare, Medi-Cal, private insurances are all paying less than they used to pay, and it still requires the same amount of service delivery to get someone to a point of wellness or a point of comfort, and those services are costing more than they used to. So the biggest challenge is how we can not compromise our care and our service and our own integrity, providing that kind of care with more limited resources.
Margaret, how do you see that, your biggest challenge?
And what Sandy said also reflects down to what I do as well, in that I find sometimes the biggest challenge is when there are patient and family needs, trying to find the appropriate staff resource, be it a nurse, a chaplain, a social worker, a home health aide, a volunteer, which is all part of our hospice team. Which member of the team is the most appropriate person to meet the needs of this patient and family that I have on the other end of the phone? Mm-hmm. And then when I do have a family calling and their loved one is struggling with pain, shortness of breath, nausea, vomiting, a myriad of other problems, how can I best, over the phone, give them the guidance, the reassurance, the expertise to help them help their loved one? Because that's also my goal, is to empower them, to give them the tools to care for their loved one. Mm-hmm. And so that is a challenge to me. And then if I'm not able to completely solve it, get the appropriate resource out there to help them. And this goes right along with Sandy was saying. We have an increased patient census. And to meet the patient's needs with what we have as far as staffing.
So there seems to be an awful lot of juggling that goes on, right?
There really is. And we try to do that juggling, always remembering that there is this person out there.
Absolutely.
And a family out there.
Absolutely.
Who desperately needs our help.
Right.
And it is a team
that
approach.
Only you can provide, right?
And it's a team.
Yeah.
And there is, we all count on each other. We all work together because we know that individually we can't meet the needs of our patient and family. But as a team,
Wow.
We certainly can.
What a beautiful approach. Michelle?
I think what Sandy is saying and Margaret is saying is most appropriate. Last year I had a perfect example of hospice intervention. My mother was dying.
Mm.
She had been enrolled in hospice the day before, and the nurse was coming out, and I remember here in Reading, and Mercy Hospice was involved, and I picked the phone up and called my friend Sandy. Uh-huh. I said, Sandy, help me now. My mother's dying. Oh. I need a nurse. She said, I am sending someone right now. Call Kimberly, my daughter. I said, Sandy, Kimberly can't do anything to help me. She said, yes, she can. Call Kimberly, let her come, and the nurse will be there. It was the most perfect example of creative collaboration, because we talk about juggling. Mm-hmm. We talk about how we juggle, but pulling family resources, pulling staff resources. And the nurse arrived, and my mom died 17 minutes after the nurse arrived in my arms. It was the most magnificent period of nursing in my entire life. I went from the chicken story to my 95-year-old mother dying in my arms, and it was the pinnacle of my career, but I could not have been a nurse to my mother without the Sandys of the world that told me what to do at that point. Mm-hmm. She focused me. She got the energy back that was so dissipated. I was just crazy at that point of my mom's dying, and she helped me pull it together. That's hospice, that's a team, and that's collaboration.
What a beautiful story, just an absolute beautiful story. What is the, you obviously get to know a lot of these patients and these families intimately. What is the single most critical thing that surfaces for somebody that's just been told you have cancer, mm-hmm. and they find themselves under your care? What kind of things are they thinking about?
When a person receives a cancer diagnosis, the first thing is just this blind panic and fear. There's a complete loss. It's what we do at any point in our careers is redirect that energy. And part of what we do as nurses is correct informational deficits. Our big goal is to make sure that they know what they're dealing with, what the options for care are, create a strong alliance with their physician, because that's so important that we not take over the reins of care, but work with the physician in managing that patient's care. And the biggest hurdle, I think, is their fear. They get in and it's just this absolutely terrified look. That once you talk to them and just spend time listening mm-hmm. to their concerns, you can wind that negative energy down and bring some positive to it. That's the goal.
What a touching place to be in. Margaret, you meet with patients on a daily basis, and what is your perspective on these situations?
You know, it's such when patients are faced with that end of life diagnosis and that a limited life expectancy, they have to make the transition from there are no more curative options to a comfort care option. And that's where that hope comes in. And we want to keep that hope and helping them see that that hope changes from a cure, but to comfort. And we touched on that earlier, and helping them see that they can live a full life. We want them to live fully until they die.
What a beautiful attitude. Just absolutely just beautiful. We're going to need to take another break here. This is KCNR 1460, Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media.
Hi, I'm Amy Rogers. I'm a certified massage therapist with a bachelor's degree in kinesiology. I've worked with a broad spectrum of clients that have a variety of needs. I like to help people get rid of their physical pain so they can enjoy their lives. You can find me at Dr. Trudy Pratt's office at 244-7873. Most insurance is accepted. Number again is 244-7873. Let this be the year that you care for yourself.
Hi, I'm Vicki Leda from Orchard Nutrition Center. For 30 years, our family-owned business has been Redding's premier choice for health foods, produce, bulk foods, and the best nutritional supplements. We pride ourselves on offering many locally produced foods. Our products are good for you and easy on your pocketbook. Orchard Nutrition Center, 221 Locust in the Cypress Shopping Center, open every day, 8 to 9.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the moment.
Welcome back. This is Henry Cuenca, and we're interviewing three nurses from Mercy Hospital. And Sandy, I wanted to ask you, I know your personal creed is you're pretty straightforward. You are tender. You are sympathetic. But you have a personal creed in that people do good with the truth.
I've found a long time ago that most people deal very well with the truth. It's when you're ambiguous about things that the situation kind of goes sideways. And when people are coming to us, they've often just gotten a horrific diagnosis or a horrific pronunciation of something that they've known on another level for a long time. When I was in the field, which is what we call going out seeing families, when I was seeing families before I became manager, one of the things I used to tell folks is the only difference between you and I is that someone has said you're dying. In reality, we're all dying. I could very easily be the one who passes away from this life before you do. So now that we've got that on the table and we've recognized that and look at it, let's put it away and let's focus on where we are right now, which is living. And then I would proceed on to getting them to tell me what their life has been about and what they see for themselves in the future. And Margaret talked about hope, and hope can change. It may not be hope for a cure, but it may be hope for... The hope doesn't even really have to be related to the death. It might be hoping that I feel well enough to walk my daughter down the aisle when she gets married in October. Mm-hmm. It may be hope that I can leave a legacy to my grandchildren through the next months that I will spend with them. And it can take on a number of different faces. It may be hope that I can finish the book that I've been writing, that now I don't have to work anymore. I'm going to stay home and I can work on this. So it's redirecting that energy, recognizing the truth, but not necessarily having to stare at it every moment, just moving on through our lives. We all think we're going to beat death.
Oh, of course.
I'm working on that, yeah, but I haven't figured it out yet. I'm working on the details. But
Margaret, do you see your patients go through a reconciliation, knowing that the time is short?
You know, they do. And What we try to help our families and patients realize is that this is a time of tremendous opportunity for them. It is a time that they could have a chance to offer forgiveness to loved ones and have loved ones offer forgiveness to them. It's an opportunity to tell people that you love them and to know how loved you are by other people. And it's a time to say goodbye. And not all people get that opportunity. And that's what this end-of-life journey can be about, these opportunities for saying goodbye and how much we love someone.
Pretty profound. Michelle, I know you get close to people as well. When they pass on, do they leave a part of them within you?
Absolutely. I think I lose a piece of my heart. I know we all do every single time we lose a patient, but as Margaret so succinctly said, we spend time focusing on living better with diseases, chronic diseases, or facing the end. And as Sandy rightly put it, there is no tomorrow promised for any of us, no next minute promised for any of us. The care that we deliver as nurses becomes the most holy and sacred encounter. There is a profound connection with a higher power that patients and their families who are experiencing a very difficult diagnosis and the potential of a life-threatening illness, they make that connection. And as nurses in this arena, we get to witness that. We get to be a part of their lives at this very, very blessed moment. Sometimes it's a new diagnosis. Sometimes they're transitioning on. And it is most beautiful.
Has to be. In a broader context, and this question is for all three of you, or which you choose to answer, but in a broader context, working the way you do with the people that you do, what effect has dealing with terminally ill people had on the broader context, meaning your family, your children, spouses, friends? How has this experience transferred to you, to your soul, I guess, is really what I want to ask.
Well, I think for all three of us and for most of us in this field, it's probably the same. We have a more profound appreciation for the sacredness of the gifts that we've been given in our spouses and our children and our families, and we treasure those relationships more. Personally, when I worked in the hospital on an orthopedic unit, my greatest fear was that my children would be wounded riding their bicycles. I didn't want them to have skis because they might hurt their heads. Now it's a different focus. It's an appreciation of this journey that we're all on and what I can do to show them every minute of the day how precious they are to me and how precious their life is.
Mm-hmm. Margaret?
Oh, gosh, in so many ways. What it has helped me and translate is that to not sweat the small things in life.
I've heard that before.
Do you know? And that may
I dropped the crumb on the kitchen floor the other night. My goodness.
Yes. And that may seem like a cliche, but it takes on deeper and greater meaning when you are working with people who are facing, you know, a life-limiting illness. You know, you suddenly realize, I don't need to be attached to that. Mm. You know, because, you know, at the end of one's life, people aren't talking about what things they acquired. They're talking about their relationships. They're talking about their friendships. They're talking about the people that they met along the way who impacted their lives. And that's what we carry with us through this life into the next, is what I believe.
Wow. Michelle, I want to hear your perspective on this, but first we're going to go for a break, but as soon as we come back, you're going to be telling us about that. Again, this is KCNR 1460, Shasta, Redding, the home of Free Fire Media.
Hello, this is Dr. Doug Craig, sponsor and host of Wake Up Call on KCNR every Sunday at 10 a.m. For over 23 years, I have maintained a clinical psychology practice in Reading, specializing in the assessment and treatment of mood, anxiety, and attention disorders in children, adolescents, and adults. In life, we all learn that we must accept what we can't change or change what we can't accept. When we're unable or unwilling to accept those things we can't control or change, we become depressed, anxious, or angry. While sadness, anger, worry, and fear are normal human emotions, sometimes they can feel overwhelming. When our normal methods of coping no longer work, psychotherapy offers us the tools we need to manage our difficult emotions and regain our balance and peace of mind. If you have any questions about this or want to learn more, give me a call at 246-7062.
Got expired or unwanted prescription drugs? If so, bring your unused or expired prescription medications to the Sears parking lot at the Mount Shasta Mall on Saturday, October 29th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. This is a safe way for you to dispose of unused or expired medications. That's Saturday, October 29th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. in the Sears parking lot of the Mount Shasta Mall. For more information on the disposal of unused or expired medications, call 245-6858, 245-6858, or log on to DEA.gov.
Welcome back. This is the Dr. Trudy Pratt Show, Positively Healthy, and I'm Henry Cuenca, sitting in today. Michelle, we were going to ask you to respond to how you're impacted just overall from a different, broader perspective in working with the patients that you work with.
You know, I think I can wrap it up into just a short statement. No one knows the soul's journey. We have no way of knowing what our patients and families are totally going through because we're not walking. We can only empathize what they're going through. And at our weekly Living Better with Cancer support group, we encourage everybody to just live life fully, enjoy every single moment, and to spend that time not dying but living. No matter what it means, if you're taking your last breath and your favorite child or grandchild or animal is on your lap, love that moment, experience the moment. And that's really, it's encouraged me as a nurse to look very closely, as Margaret said, at not sweating the small stuff. They don't mean anything. What's truly at the core of our being, what's important, is relationships and being able to tell people that you love them or that maybe you didn't really like them in the first place and you'd rather not have them around at this very precious moment of your life. So honesty and integrity are really what it's done to me. Mm-hmm. The hallmarks of it are honesty.
Mm-hmm. Where do you all get your strength?
From each other. Mm-hmm. When I say we're a team, I mean we really are a team. And I've been a part of a number of different teams, both personally and professionally, but I've never experienced anything quite like this. It's a group that circles around each other, supports and buoys each other up. If one member of the team has something going on in their personal life, it's well known and supported. And gosh, I remember one morning when one of our nurses called in and said, "My dog's just been hit by a car." And within 30 seconds, her patients were divided up by others saying, "Stay home, take care of yourself today, we'll take care of your patients." Something as simple but as profound as that, you can't help but draw strength from a group that has that much of an esprit de corps and that much faith, too.
You know, in the Record Searchlight article, the reporter Leland Gordon said about you, Margaret, "Her moral compass is solid, and her belief in the good we can all do for each other is profound." And I can relate to that and see that in you first moment that I spoke with you. And I know that you have a great, profound belief in God. And I know God plays an important role in your life. Could you tell us how active your relationship with God is? I know that each morning you pray to God. Mm-hmm. And could you share with us?
You know, Henry, I would be nothing without God. I feel, an empty vessel. And I ask God every day to be an instrument of His peace, to be able to, I ask for guidance in what I say, in what I do. And I believe that God is our divine source of all the good we do. And it's not me. Whatever goodness comes, I don't believe it's me. I believe that it is God directing me And you know what? I just try to see Jesus in each one of us, and in the sick and in the dying. There's Jesus. There's Jesus in all of us. And to be able to, I mean, it's such a profound honor to be able to minister to people and to care for them, because they have the divine in them. So the work that we do, it's our privilege to be able to do the work.
Right. Sandy, I know that you say that you hire from the heart, that when you are trying to fill a position, that you look for the heart of the individual. Did you hire this young lady here?
I did not. I didn't have that honor. Actually, she brought me to hospice. Margaret and I, years ago, shared a position in cardiac surgery. That's how we got to know each other. And she left and came to hospice, and I stayed in cardiac surgery and eventually made my way to hospice because of her. Mm-hmm. But you're right. I do try to hire for heart. When I interview someone, what I want to hear is the passion in their voice. I ask them questions and give them a chance to tell me that they feel passionate about life and about caring for each other. And if that isn't there, I help them to bloom someplace that's more suited to their talents.
And Sandy is very good at ferreting out those individuals who may perceive it as a job versus those individuals who perceive it as a true calling and vocation. Mm-hmm. And she
has to have that within herself.
Absolutely. You know. And she does.
My husband asked me a couple of weeks ago, why do all hospice staff talk that way? And I said, talk what way? You know, like Margaret does.
Sandy, I know that one of your earliest goals as a young lady, a young girl, was to be a mommy. And do you consider this like being a mommy?
Oh, very much so. What I tell my staff is, I'm not the boss. I'm the manager of the unit. I'm the person that keeps things running, much like a mommy does at home. But I can pull out the big guns when I need to.
I'm sure
you
can.
Sort of like
you
do with your kids. But no, we're very much a family. We very much
so that care that of each other. That was your dream.
It was.
Right?
It was.
It's a different type of mommy.
It's a different type of mommy. As my kids grew up, I had to find someone else to smother.
Well, lucky all of you. We're going to take our final break here. Again, this is KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media, and we're going to be right back.
Today, most beef and poultry products come from factory farms, from animals raised in confinement, fed antibiotics, and genetically modified organisms. Fortunately, there's a local source of humanely raised grass-fed beef, organic chickens, and pastured free-range eggs. The Martin family at the Lazy 69 Ranch near Round Mountain wants you to get back in touch with your food and your farmer. Look for Lazy 69 products at Orchard Nutrition, Holiday Market, Sunset Market, or online at lazy69ranch.com.
Hello, folks. I'm Bob, the Mount Shasta Springwater Drop. It's no wonder that Mount Shasta Springwater is the preferred choice here in Northern California and Southern Oregon. It's natural, it tastes good, and it's healthy for you. If you are not drinking Mount Shasta Springwater, you owe it to yourself to give it a try. Give us a call at 1-800-922-6227 and start enjoying the refreshing taste of Mount Shasta Springwater today. When you call, tell them you want the Bob the Drop special. Mount Shasta Springwater, naturally the best.
Hey, you want to help more kids have a great Christmas? Then join the Marines. You won't have to put on a uniform. Just grab a fork and dig in. It's the Toys for Tots Spaghetti Feed Fundraiser, Sunday, November 6th at Fat Boys Rotisserie and Sandwiches on Twin View Drive in Redding. Bring a new unwrapped toy to donate and get ready to enjoy a great dinner. Tickets just $10. Call 515-5226 or 221-4144. Sponsors include Clyde's Home Electronics and Classic Car Parts, Aces, The Cam Club, KLXR Music and Memories, and KCNR Free Fire Media.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last. Just kicking down the cobblestones, looking for fun and feeling groovy.
Welcome back. Again, this is Henry Cuenca, and we're meeting with our guests, three registered nurses from Redding Mercy Hospital. And this is our final segment, and I wondered if you could reach down in your experiences. I mean, you obviously have touched thousands of lives and the most difficult situations that are imaginable. And I wonder if you could reach back in your experiences and your memory and relate to us experiences that you had with people passing on, their families, and just the just the inspiration that it may have left you with these individuals. And Margaret, do you have an account to tell us about?
You know, Henry, I do. There's actually many, but one that I remember to this day. It happened in my early years of hospice, and I was just coming to appreciate, you know, the mystery of dying and its beauty and the strength that a family can show in being with someone and helping them navigate this. And we just try to be guides for the family and guides for our patients. But what in this particular case, it was a gentleman who was dying, and he had been unconscious for probably 3 or 4 days, and the family was keeping vigil, providing care and, you know, medications to help with his pain, and they were just so lovingly attentive. And in the trajectory of the dying process, we thought, gosh, this could happen, you know, any minute. And I was trying to guide the family during this time. And sometimes what we have learned in hospice is that a person will hang on for until that little bit of unfinished business is sometimes needs to be taken care of. And some days had gone by, and I was with the family, and it occurred to me to ask them, is there anybody that he hasn't seen or talked to that he may need to say something or hear their voice? And now this person is unconscious, but I always tell our families, talk to your loved one, because hearing is one of those senses that stays with us to the very end. So they had been talking to him. Of course, he couldn't respond. And they thought and they thought, and they said, you know, there's a grandson in Alaska that he helped raise, and we haven't been able to reach him. Maybe could it be the opportunity to hear his voice? And I said, you know, is there any way possible we can try to reach that grandson? So they quickly, everybody's going through their address books trying to track down this grandson. And you know what? They found a number. So his father, you know, dialed the grandson, and he was able to reach him. And I said, just put the phone up to his ear. And I told the grandson, because we found him in Alaska, I said, just, you know, your grandpa wants to hear your voice. Just talk to him. Tell him anything that you would like, anything that needs to be said. And so they put the phone up to our patient who was dying, and I could just hear the grandson telling his grandfather, you know, thank you so much for all that you did to me, that you helped raise me, you carried me through difficult times, you believed in me when nobody else did. Thank you, Grandpa. I love you. I will always love you, and I will always carry what you taught me with me forever. And we saw tears coming down our patient's eyes at this moment. And the grandson said goodbye. And you know, this gentleman died about 2 minutes after that phone call ended. And it's just such a miraculous thing. And I carry that with me. I will carry that with me forever. That has changed my life.
My goodness sakes. And, you know, I didn't bring my box of Kleenex. All of my shows, I furnish Kleenex.
This Everybody, is why it's such an honor to be with people. Goodness, what end of life.
Beautiful story. What an absolute beautiful story. Michelle, could you cite one of your experiences?
Yeah. Many years ago on a bone marrow transplant unit, we had a 3-year-old, Casey, who was just the most magnificent child. He was funny, he was humorous, and I am not a pediatric oncology nurse, but Casey touched my heart. He actually introduced me to SpongeBob SquarePants, and he was just the most delightful kid. And I came in one morning, and Casey had died just before I came on duty. He died at 6 a.m.
And how old was he, Michelle?
3 years old. Uh-huh. And I remember not understanding it. Nurses don't always have the right answers. We don't quite get it sometimes. And I remember saying to one of the pediatric oncology nurses, how could this happen? How could there be a power, a God, that would just take this three-year-old child? He hasn't lived enough. And she said, Michelle, he's lived. He's done all the living he needs to, and now it's time for him to go home. He didn't have to stay long. God needed him home, and that was it. She said, every child that dies early, we understand that it's just their time, just like an adult time to die. And I've held on to that, and when I care for patients and they live or die, I treasure every single moment with them. And they never know whether I'm going to make it back to work the next day or hear my voice, and I never know if I'm going to hear them. But we commit to each other and we care for each other.
Right. Sandy, we have about a minute to go, and
how do you follow that?
Boy.
It's an honor to hear these stories from both of these women, and I'm not going to try to tell one story in a minute. What I will tell you, though, is that there isn't a day that goes by that we don't hear profound stories of the experiences that are happening with these families and these patients. One of the most common things that we see is that families are astounded when their loved one is suddenly seeing people who have passed from this earth already. Right. And they carry on conversations. I experienced this with my husband's aunt who was speaking to someone that wasn't there. Mm-hmm. We couldn't see her, but she was there to guide her on
Absolutely.
Her journey. And we see this every day, and it just deepens my faith. And I told someone recently, you don't see very many people die atheist. It just doesn't happen.
Well, I'm going to tell you that this has been a life-changing event for me, having this meeting with you ladies, and I'm just profoundly touched by the compassion that you carry, the sensitivity, and everything that it takes to do what you do. And I'm just very, very moved. And we'll never forget this, and know that just sense that you folks are up here a couple of miles from Palisadro, you know, doing your job 24/7. Before we sign off here, I wanted to personally thank you, Michelle and Sandy and Margaret, for appearing on the show. And I'm just very, very thankful that all of us in Shasta County have just a wonderful group of nurses like you folks here in Reading. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Henry.
It's been our honor.
Again, this is KCNR 1460, Shasta Reading, the home of Free Fire Media. And next week, Dr. Trudy Pratt will be back in her place. Thank you very much.
Is a blue shoots up through the stony ground. There's no room, no space to rent in this town. You're out of luck, and the reason that you had to care, the traffic is stuck, and you're not moving anywhere. You thought you found a friend, take you out of this place, someone you can lend a hand in return for grace. It's a beautiful
KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media. This is KCNR, Shasta, Redding.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Stanley. Iraq's Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki confirming today the reason why all U.S. troops will be out of his country by the end of the year. It's because the U.S. insisted that any troops who would stay past that deadline would have to have immunity, would have to be shielded from prosecution or lawsuits. Al-Maliki making it clear it was Iraq that refused to let soldiers stay under those U.S. terms. But he says talks will continue on how U.S. trainers can still work with the Iraqi forces into the future, and the U.S. Defense Secretary agrees.
We're prepared to meet their training needs. We're prepared to engage in exercises with them. We're prepared to provide guidance and training with regards to their pilots. We are prepared to continue to develop an ongoing relationship with them into the future.
Pentagon Chief Leon Panetta currently in Bali, the first stop on his first Asian tour as defense secretary. Keep your eyes on the skies this weekend.
At some point this weekend, another defunct space satellite will fall out of orbit back to Earth again, but this time its projected path will be anywhere from Canada to Brazil, meaning unlike NASA's